Good morning, everybody. Am I too loud? A little bit? No? Okay. So there was a poetry recital contest that took place in London where young men and women would get up and they would recite poems. And there was a whole group of judges who would determine, they would vote on who they felt was the most eloquent and the best reciter of a poem. So they have the whole contest and they get down to the finalists, and there's a young man, and they were told to recite Psalm 23. So he begins, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He restores my soul, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And there's a standing ovation, and everyone is amazed by how incredibly eloquent this young man was. And it was pretty clear that he would be the winner. The judges vote upon it, and indeed, they hand him the trophy. But before everyone goes home, there's an older gentleman, a European man, sitting in the crowd. He raises his hand. He says, "Can I have a chance to recite the Kapitel Tehillim as well?" And they looked at him. Okay. So the man stands up and he starts saying the exact same psalm, Psalm 23. And as he's reciting every single word with emotion and intention, the crowd is almost totally shocked. They're silent, and many of them are actually brought to tears. After the man is done, he sits down. There's no applause, but everyone just kind of sits there. As they're all walking out, the young man who actually won the trophy, he goes over to the older gentleman and he says, "I have to ask you a question. First of all, you deserve this more than I do." And the old man says, "No, you did a wonderful job. Keep it. I wasn't really competing. But the question I have for you is, why was it that when I recited that same psalm, people were cheering and they were clapping, there was applause? And when you said it, the exact same words, there was silence and people were moved to tears. Can you explain that to me?" So the old man said, "I'll tell you, it's very simple. The only difference between you and me is that I know the shepherd." Did this story really happen? I doubt it. But it's a very moving illustration where you could have two people saying the exact same speech, teaching the exact same ideas, but ultimately it's not what you say, it's who you are that makes all the difference in the world. The topic we're going to speak about this morning is empowering our children with emunah. How in the world can we infuse a sense of real emunah and bitachon into our children in a world where there is so much going on, there is so much noise, there is so much clutter, there is so much distraction? Ultimately, it comes down to you as the parent or the educator knowing the shepherd. And therefore, whatever I'm able to transfer, whatever I'm able to teach to my child or my student, it's not just the words that I'm saying, but it's the person who I am. The Chazon Ish tells us in the Sefer Emunah Bitachon, he speaks about the job of a Rebbe. And he says, oftentimes, if you ever stand in a classroom, and parenthetically, it's very easy to lecture to people about the best way of education and how to inspire the students. But when you're actually standing in the classroom with a bunch of teenage boys, it's not that poshut. Says the Chazon Ish, as a Rebbe, you have to be very careful that when you get upset or disappointed in a child, make sure that your midos ra'os, your negative character traits, are not coming out as you're giving them, hopefully, constructive criticism. What happens if I can't hold myself back? And this is somewhat of a scary, daunting challenge, but the Chazon Ish tells us, "Kasher miyaser es talmido bebitu igas, Zakas Rogiz ala Oval Esher Asa." When I'm screaming at a child, when I'm raising my voice, when my anger is being expressed, then Misarev Kan Ravato, you're mixing together both bad and good. The good potentially could be they might listen to you. Probably not. But they might listen to you, and they might stop doing whatever it is you felt was inappropriate. What's the ra? The ra is that they learn from you much more than what you're saying, but how you're behaving. If they sense my kas, if they sense my lack of control, if they sense my anger, and it's coming from a slight to my ego, it's coming from my own personal issues that I'm struggling with, then what I'm teaching them is the best way to react to someone who offends you is to lose it. That's the ra. I saw recently in the Sefer Bayis HaManucha from Moshe Stern, he has a very beautiful question. He asks, what's the difference between a nachash and an aluka, a snake and a leech? So back in the olden times, we know from many Gemaras that it was assumed that there was a medicinal benefit to having a leech suck out some of the toxins from your blood. So both of them hurt, they both bite you. What's the difference between a snake and a leech? So says Rav Moshe Stern, the bite is the exact same. The leech, though, you know, is taking out the toxins and helping you, and the nachash is infusing, injecting poison into you. It all depends on how you understand what's happening. And his application was to ever giving criticism. Whenever we give tochacha, and we always assume at least b'shas maisa until we regret it 15 minutes later, but while we're saying it, we always assume this is l'shem shemayim, this is beneficial for my son, for my daughter, for my student. How do they view it? It's the same bite. Whenever I hear that I'm doing something inappropriate, or somebody I look up to tells me that I'm off the track, it hurts me. But if I feel it's coming from a source of love, I know it's because you care desperately about me, then it's the leech. It's a bite, but you're taking out the toxins, it's helpful, it's beneficial. If I know it's coming from your own issues, or your own lack of anger management, then it's a nachash. You're biting me and you're injecting poison into my neshama. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a few famous tshuvas, he says, what is the ikar chinuch? What is the main thing we're trying to convey to our children? He says, the ikar chinuch is we have to be mechazik dim lechancho be'emuna b'Hashem yisborach b'turaso, to educate them in emuna, in the reality and the truth of the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the veracity of the Torah. And at the same time, shekol davar shenosnim hu matnas me'Hashem yisborach, to give them the feeling that everything we have, every breath we take, every mitzvah we have the opportunity of performing, that's a matana gemura, that's a precious gift from Hashem. If we're able to somehow transfer those two ideas, the reality, the truth of Torah, together with the sweetness, the mesikus haTorah, then says Rav Moshe Feinstein as a haftacha, what will emerge from this? Then yikna ava l'Hashem yisborach, our children or our students, they will acquire a love and an appreciation for Hashem, ula avi ve'imo, and to their mother and father as well. Because ultimately, we as their role models, we represent the Torah, we represent Hashem. And if we could live that lifestyle, if we could be the person who knows the shepherd intimately, so then they feel that ava and that mesikus as well. That's the ikar chinuch, says Rav Moshe. Remember, somebody told me they had their child was probably 3 or 4, and in the back seat of the car he had a little drivey toy. Right, so as the father was driving, the kid would be sitting back there, and he's turning the steering wheel. So at one point he hears his son, he's honking his little horn, and he's yelling, hey, don't you know how to drive? Get off the road! Father's thinking to himself, oh, where did he learn that from? That's not the way you speak, basic derech eretz. And then it dawned on him, I do say that myself once in a while. It could be efshir that he got that from me. So we have to be the person who knows the shepherd. On a deeper level, our relationship with our children, our connection with our students, is really creating their relationship with the Torah and the mitzvos. When Lot leaves Avram Avinu, Rashi famously tells us, he didn't just say, I'm disappointed in my uncle and therefore I'm not going to hang out with you anymore. But rather he said, "Efshi lo b'Avram v'lo b'Elokav. I want nothing to do with Avram or his God." Where did that come from? Why do you have to diss Hashem? Why do you have to say, I want nothing to do with the Kodesh Baruch Hu? You were raised in a house of such emunah and bitachon and chesed. It's one thing if you feel maybe your uncle's deserting you by asking you to leave. I understand that feeling. But where does that translate to, therefore you want nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But the answer is so incredibly simple. If I don't have a good relationship with my father, if I feel that he's neglectful, if I feel that my Rebbe doesn't really love me, doesn't really care about me unconditionally, then it's not just about you, it's my whole relationship with the Torah and mitzvos and yadus in general. It's being injected with poison. It's a nachash. I think that when you look at young men and women who seem to be thriving in their avodas Hashem, who have a healthy balance of yiras shamayim and ava and chesed, and appreciation for the Torah lifestyle, it comes back to something much broader than this particular mitzvah, that particular chesed, this chevra, this community. Ultimately, our association with Torah and mitzvos comes down to our vision and understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is my picture of God? Everything else will emanate from that vision. Do I view HaKadosh Baruch Hu as someone who's nitpicking, who's always trying to find the flaws within me, who's never accepting me for who I am? Do I view HaKadosh Baruch Hu as something that doesn't love me unconditionally because I failed so many times? Or do I have this overwhelming sense of love and embrace? That makes all the difference in the world for everything we possibly do, everything that branches out within our lives, within our individual relationships, and within our association with Torah. It gets back to our picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember Rabbi Moshe Goldstein, he's one of the superstars in the college Kiruv world. So he asked me if I could join a meeting with him and a young lady that he's been dealing with, and she's been growing. She's really having a crisis. So I got together and the three of us were sitting there at the table, and she was explaining that her crisis went as follows. Going to the classes, they had a Maimonides series, and learning Bechavrusa, I'm becoming more and more religious. And at first I was happy about that, but then, like, as I was thinking about it, I was really asking myself, does this mean it's real? Is there really a controller of the universe that's involved with our daily lives? That's overwhelming. And then I started really thinking about it deeper, and I was freaking out. B'zeh haloshen, I was freaking out. I have a hard time functioning now. What would you recommend, Rabbi? So I asked the question, and I was hoping for this answer, and Baruch Hashem, she gave it to me. I said, what kind of relationship do you have with your mother? And she said, you know what? Really, we have a wonderful connection. Many of my friends say they can't speak freely with their mother, but I could tell her anything and everything, and I feel that she just, you know, she loves me and accepts me. We go shopping together, we share hobbies. I said, perfect. The way you should picture God is the exact same way you feel about your mother. It's not saying that Hashem doesn't have expectations of us. It's not saying that do whatever you want to do when it's all good. We're here for a reason. We have to accomplish our life's mission. But the hargasha, the feeling that we should have towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that same feeling as I know there's a mommy who loves me dearly. There are many different pshatim, many different interpretations as to what Moshe did wrong when he hit the rock. Hundreds of different mefarshim. I want to share with you something from the Shmona Perakim from the Rambam. The Shmona Perakim is the introduction of the Rambam to Perkei Avos. Can you guess how many chapters there are in the Shemoneh Prakim? So he writes as follows. He says that really the chet of Moshe Rabbeinu was not that he lacked emunah, not that he just got angry, but the way he says it is, mipnei shemetunu osav kulam umidavarav hayu lemedim. All of Klal Yisrael was looking at Moshe. Every step that he took, every word that he said, the entirety of the Jewish people were looking at him as a role model. And therefore, says the Rambam, the entire Klal Yisrael was thinking, Lule Shayadua Shashem Kasaleinu, it must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at us right now, otherwise Moshe would not be angry. That was the chet of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because he lost his temper on some level, not intrinsically was that the flaw, but the message that was sending to Klal Yisrael that Hashem is angry with us, when, in the words of the Rambam, we don't find Hashem getting angry. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramban in his Perush and Chumash, he was bothered by that. He speaks very harshly against this particular pshat of the Rambam. He says, how can you tell me that Hashem wasn't angry? There are many clear psukim that speak about the kas of Hashem. Mei Meriva. This was a time where we had Klal Yisrael rebelling against their creator. What are you talking about, Rambam? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't angry? So I think the answer to understand where the Rambam was coming from is that of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu was disappointed, whatever anger means when it comes to Hashem. However, in the expression of anger that Moshe Rabbeinu was sharing with Klal Yisrael, there was something there, there was something personal. There was something that didn't represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was the chet of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what's changed his destiny for the rest of his life and the destiny of Klal Yisrael. It wasn't because he lacked faith. It wasn't because he got angry. It was because the type of anger he was showing to Klal Yisrael was a misrepresentation of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually felt. I think the amazing thing that we could glean from this Rambam is that when we look up to somebody, it doesn't have to be a Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't have to be the leader of the Jewish people. When I'm looking up to a father or to a mother or to a Rebbe or to a Mora, it's not just my relationship with you that has an impact on my relationship with the Judaism that I'm living, but it's my perception of you as a human being that creates the image of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu that will have a total impact on everything that I do in life. You represent God. No pressure. There is an article in Newsweek going back about 11 years. The article was entitled, What Do Children Understand About God? 95% of American parents profess a religious affiliation, and many of them say that their religious beliefs directly impact their parenting. But the science says they have it backwards. It is the parenting which dictates a children's vision of God. When parents are more supportive of a child's autonomy, giving her a sense that she is in control of her own life, a child is more likely to see God as a more forgiving God. God is an authority figure to be respected, but he's less fearsome. And the article goes on to say that my picture of you as a parent, as a role model, creates my image of God, and it's my image of God that we know dictates everything that I do and the way I feel in all aspects of Yadus. There's a famous story with the Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, where a chassid came over to him and he said, Rebbe, I have to confess, I feel awkward sharing this with you, but I've been having sveikus. I've been having doubts. And the Rebbe said, listen, you know, having sveikus, that's natural, that's normal. In what area? How could I be mechazek you? And the chassid said, it's nothing nuanced. I'm doubting the very existence of the Eibishter. I'm doubting the reality of God. And Rav Levi Yitzchak said as follows. He said, if I had to believe in the same God that you don't believe in, I wouldn't believe in him either. If I had to believe in the same God you don't believe in, I would not believe in him either. Meaning to say, of course you're having svekas. Of course you're having a hard time believing in the picture of God that was painted for you when you were 8 years old. That's a very childlike, overly simplistic image of God that doesn't make any sense. And I would be lacking emunah in that as well. It's all about our image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to briefly discuss, what exactly is that image? God has no image, no form. But what's the feeling that we're trying to convey to our children? How does God actually feel about us? There's a Zohar that writes as follows. Il mole havayodin b'nei nosher yichum sadarachim kutshabricha l'Yisrael. If a human being would only have a glimpse of the eternal Ava that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael, we would be roaring like lions chasing after Hashem. That's the feeling that any human being would have if we just got a little bit of a look into that depth of Ava that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. How do we convey that? Does God love us unconditionally? The answer we know is yes. Does that mean there are no expectations? Of course not. What does it mean, though, to love unconditionally? And if ultimately they're looking at me to live that message, I have to know what that means, not just in the philosophical way of how to explain God's love, but I have to know that in a halacha lemaisa way, how am I relating to you? How am I feeling towards you? There's a Gemara in Kedushin that has a machlokus between Yehuda and Remeir. What the pasuk says, "Banim atem l'Hashem elokeichem, you Klal Yisrael, your children to Hashem." Is that true in all situations? Does that make any difference in what we do? So Remeir was of the opinion. Let's start with Yehuda. He says, "Only when you're following the Torah, then kruyim banim, then you're called children." But if you're not listening to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then you're not called children. And Remeir comes along and he says, "Bein kach u bein kach atem kruyim banim." It doesn't make a difference what you're doing. If you're listening, if you're totally disobeying and rejecting and neglecting the Torah, "Bein kach u bein kach nikra banim." Usually we have a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Remeir. The Gemara in Erevin tells us we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. This is one of the rare exceptions, though, where the Rashba and others tell us we paskin like Reb Meir. What that means, actually, halacha lemais, is a different discussion. But hashkafically speaking, we paskin like Reb Meir, bein kach u bein kach kruyim banim. What exactly is this debate? It sounds like such a massive philosophical argument. Are you telling me that Reb Yehuda was of the opinion that if we mess up, or we go off the derech, or even something smaller, I'm not careful with netilas yadayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Oh, you're not acting like a child, you're not considered a child." And Remeir would be the other extreme. Remeir would say, "No, it doesn't make a difference, Hashem loves you." What's the nekudas of machlokas? What are they arguing about? So some of the Balei Machshava explain as follows. Obviously, both Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda agree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves Klal Yisrael and every individual of Klal Yisrael unconditionally. The only debate was, if we choose to reject the Torah, if we choose to go off the path of the Torah, will that have any impact on the love that Hashem has for me? Obviously, Hashem will still love us. Avas olam mahavtich, I'm always going to love you, but does that have any impact whatsoever? Rabbi Huda says, yeah. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't give you the same love if you're not following my instructions. I'm still your father, you're still my child, but there is some kind of breach in the relationship. Reb Meir comes along and says, no, bein kach u bein kach, banim atem l'Hashem lokeichem, no matter how far you go, I might be disappointed in the behavior, I might be desirous of your tshuva, but that has zero impact on the ava that I have for you. You might make a mistake, but I never view you as a mistake. Bein kach u'bein kach, that's the definition of unconditional love. There is a young lady going back to the turn of the century, not this century, the previous one. She was growing up in a small village in Europe, Dina Gubenfield. And her family was very religious. Her father was very pious. He was a carpenter, but he would learn for hours a day. And for some reason, she just never connected. And when she was in her teens, she started dressing in a different way and acting differently and getting involved with the wrong crowds. And her parents were always trying to shower her with love. Her father had less patience than her mother, as is often the case. But the mother would keep the father in check. Listen, we just have to love her and support her. And Emir Tzeshem one day. So what happened was, in that time, she got swept along with the secular Zionist movement. Now, being from Yidden back then, that was devastating. Halavai, that should be the main issues our kids have today, right? Zionism. But she got swept away and she ended up marrying a secular Jew, a guy that had no background whatsoever, and they moved to Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to be pioneers in the land. They joined the kibbutz and they were, you know, there draining the swamps and building the country. Years went by where there was no communication between the mother and father and Dina, and then they received the telegram. Telegram said, Tati and Mami, I understand that you're getting older. I know that you're retired now, Tati. We would love you to move in with us here in Tel Aviv. And you could stay here, right? The sunlight years, the sunset years of life. So they got this letter and they had no idea what to do. The father's first reaction is, there's no possible way we're going to leave the shtetl and go to Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv, I've heard, it's very secular, and I don't want to live in that kind of environment. And to live in the house of Dina, who knows what it's like over there? We could love her from a distance. And his wife convinced him, listen, we should at least ask a shaila. Let's ask a shaila. So they went to the local Rav, and there was a whole conversation. Basically, he said, it seems to me both financially and in regards to having someone to take care of you as you are aging, and it could even be spiritually beneficial for Dina just to be there with her and the grandchildren, I would encourage you to go. So they ended up traveling to Eretz Yisrael. It was a long, difficult journey. They get to Tel Aviv, and the father is standing in a different universe, seeing Yidden doing things he's never seen before, and people driving, and Shabbos, and the way they would speak, and he couldn't take it. The second Shabbos, though, that the father and mother were together with Dina and her husband and her children, they were getting ready to light candles. And the mother was thankful that Dina set up the candles for her, and she was about to make the bracha. And then she saw Dina was standing actually right to her side, and she was about to light candles as well. She says, do you do this every Friday night? Dina says, no. This is the first time I'm lighting candles. The first time in her life as a married woman, she's lighting candles. So the mother, feeling a deep sense of emotion, she says the bracha, tears going down her cheek. And they sit down together as a family and they have an actual Shabbos dinner. The father starts to sing Zmiros. The son-in-law doesn't know them that well, but he begins to participate and join in. And you fast forward 3 months, and the family has Shabbos dinner and Shabbos lunch together every week. And eventually, the grandchildren are now going not to a chaloni school, but they're going to a yeshiva. And basically, the mother turns to the father, and she said, I told you, we just had to be there for her. We had to support her. We had to show her love. Baruch Hashem, look what happened. Fast forwarding now more than a century, the Gubenfields have hundreds of grandchildren and great-grandchildren who are Shomrei Torah mitzvos living in Eretz Yisrael and all throughout the world. But it all went back to the Tati and Mami being able to keep the love, keep the relationship, keep the respect. And that made all the difference in the world. Parshas Balak Bilam shares a nevua. He says, Lo hibit oven b'Yaakov, v'lo ro amal b'Yisrael. Hashem doesn't see any sin in Klal Yisrael. Hashem Elokov imo shruas melech bo. Hashem, their God, is with them, and the friendship of the king is together with the Jewish people. Hashem sees no chatayim. Rashi explains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not medaktik, and he's not so meticulous. He doesn't see the chait. How in the world could Rashi say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not meticulous? And the Gemara tells us, Kola omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu vatra and yuvatru mo'oyi. Anyone who says that Hashem looks past our iniquity, Hashem will look past you. How can Rashi say? He's not medaktik. He doesn't care. So explains the Or HaChaim, and this is such an important yisod, not just in our concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in our whole she'ifa, our ambition, as to what it means to be a parent, what it means to be a teacher. Or HaChaim says that Lo hibit oven b'Yaakov means, of course Hashem sees our chait, and of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medaktek with us, and He wants only our best and our improvement. But it's not b'Yaakov, it's not in us, it's not a mum, it's not something that transforms the way He views me as a person. It doesn't impact the love, the unconditional ava of Bein Kach U Bein Kach, Banim Atem LaHashem Elokeichem. Hashem doesn't see that within me. That's unconditional love. I'll leave you with a story and a letter from Rav Kook, and we'll end with this. Rav Yaakov Naiman was the great Rosh Yeshiva of Or Yisrael in Petach Tikva. And he was told that one of the bachur and one of the young men, he was going out on Motzei Shabbos every now and again, joining up with friends, Ben Yehuda Street, and watching movies, and doing things that a yeshiva guy should not be doing. So the Rosh Yeshiva told this the friend of the bachur, do me a favor. Next time you hear that he's planning on going out on Motzei Shabbos, let me know. Oh, Rebbe, I don't want to do that. I'm going to get him in trouble, and he's not going to like me. Please just let me know. So the kachava, that's what happens. That Shabbos, the Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Yaakov Naiman finds out that this young man is going out Motzei Shabbos. Now how does he go? He takes a bus, obviously. So as soon as Shabbos was over, Rosh Yeshiva would usually wait 72 minutes. He didn't wait 72 minutes. But he got himself a taxi, and he went down to the Ben Yehuda Street where he was going to be hanging out, and he took his big Choshev Rosh Yeshiva fur coat with him, and he was standing right there waiting around for a little while. Eventually the bus pulls up and young men and women are coming off the bus, right? And there's Yehuda sees his Rosh Yeshiva and he is paralyzed in fear. His face is turning all different shades of red and green. Rebbe, Gevach Yehuda. He can't even answer. All Rav Yaakov Naiman said to this young man was, first of all, you're in Yerushalayim in the middle of December. It's freezing around here. Do me a favor. Take my coat. He takes off his big fur coat. He puts it on Yehuda. He buttons it for him. And he says, just promise me, however late you're out tonight, you're going to keep this coat on to stay warm. He gives him a big embrace, a kiss on the cheek, gets back in the cab, and goes to Yeshiva. Yehuda said after this particular experience, he said, that hug stayed with me for 30 years afterwards. Because what he was sending, the message that he was sending to me, without using that many words, was, you know I don't want you to be here. You know I'm disappointed. But you also know that I love you unconditionally and I have faith in you. I respect you. And I know there's so much to work with here. Lo hibit ovum b'Yaakov. I'm not looking at you any differently than I did before. And we'll end with the letter from Rav Kook. Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Kook wrote this in 1908, speaking about the generation of young men and women who were secular, trying to build Eretz Yisrael. And the question that was posed to him was, how do we react to these people? Should we be supporting them financially? Should we be helping them? Or do we just tell them, we want nothing to do with you? You're totally denying the truth of Torah. You're not living a life of a Yid. So Rav Kook tells the person who's the shoel, the one asking the question, I understand the pain you're going through. But if you were to think, like other people were saying at the time, to leave to Hefker, let them do whatever they want to if they're leaving the ways of Amuna, based on the storm of the time, Hinini Omer bepemole, I will tell you without any mincing of my words, Shelo zu haderech asher Hashem chefetz ba. This is not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. He goes on to say, Haneshama panimisha kedushas Yisrael mistereres bekerev levavam. You have to realize that even though they don't look great on the outside, that neshama tahora is hidden within them with so much incredible potential, and that radiance at any moment can start shining through. What is our chiyuv? What is our obligation during this time? Says Rav Kook, as much as we possibly can, we have to show them love, we have to support them. We can never give off the impression that we agree to their lifestyle, Chalila. But at the same time, any word, any hashkafa you could share with them, if it's devarim hayotzim and halev, words that are coming from a genuine source, it will have an impact. Maybe a little bit, maybe a lot, we don't know, but this can change their lives. So the idea of empowering our children with emunah is the greatest task that we have as parents and educators, and to reinforce the notion that if we don't know the shepherd ourselves, the words that we are telling them will not have the impact. Their relationship with Judaism is based on their relationship with us. Their image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which defines and determines everything they do, is based on the image of God that they have, and that image of God is painted by us. They look up to us in that way. We have to love them. We have to love them unconditionally. We have to have expectations. But the expectations are also what gives us that sense of respect. I know you can do so much more. Bein kach u bein kach, banim atem lo Hashem elokeichem. We should be zocha for tremendous yata d'shmaya.